25 years ago, Natalie Goldberg's classic bestseller, Writing Down the Bones, broke new ground in its approach to writing practice. Now in her new book on a revolutionary new method, The True Secret of Writing, Connecting Life with Language, Goldberg again looks to bring us to a boot camp that will inspire writers. It's a great pleasure to welcome Natalie Goldberg to the roundtable. Thank you very much for joining us once again. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I'm glad to be talking to you.
What brought you to this particular volume in the sense of connecting life with language?
Well, the secret is I'd always been interested in that. I wasn't really ever just a writing teacher. People thought that when I came out with Writing Down the Bones. But really, I've always been interested in having whatever wakes you up as a writer to also feed your life. You know, often writers, we hear stories, they commit suicide, they're alcoholics. They cut off the life. They're able to put it in their writing, but they can't bring it to their life. And I've always wanted for it to grow and become bigger. So really, this book is The True Secret of Writing, is coming forward with that. How do we live what we know as writers? And part of it is I've developed over the last 12 years silent retreats that students come to, and in them we sit, walk, write.
What was it about silence that got you thinking of putting this into a retreat setting where people would come and you would give them that opportunity?
Well, one of the things that I've said over and over is that writing is 90% listening. And in order to, when you listen, you receive the world and you open up. And the other thing, so it's about being quiet. Our society is about talk, talk, talk. But we have to know the other side. Just like in writing, what's the other side of writing? No writing. We have to be comfortable with both. And the other thing that I tell my students is, don't vomit it all up with words, with talking. If you have stories you want to tell, let them build in your belly and then put it on the page. Don't always dissipate the energy. So in having silence, you're able to let things build in you and then put it on the page. And it's also a way, you know, during a retreat, to just receive the world. Not just hearing what people say, but also feeling the trees, smelling the air, feeling the season. You know, taking in things on a deeper level, which is really what writers do. And I think why people want to write, because they're hungry for connecting with a deeper level.
What are we listening for during this practice, in the sense, if you have an idea of what you want to write, what are you listening for to facilitate that?
Oh, very cagey question. Well, what I'm listening for instance, I'll throw out something. What do you regret? Go for 10 minutes. But what I'm really listening for, they might go to a whole different topic and not pay attention to me. I don't really care. I'm listening for them to come from their own raw, deep life and to connect with the truth and have a confidence in their experience and a relationship with their mind. Whatever comes through, to accept it and put it down and let the mind unfold. So really, I throw out a topic just as a way not to have to face an empty page. But really, you can go any place. You can ignore me, say, Natalie threw out this, but what I really want to write about is, it just gives you something to push off on. But I'm aiming for students to have a confidence in their own experience, a relationship with their mind, and a trusting of their thoughts.
We hear so much about the isolation of a writer, of the solitary act of writing, of being one person with their thoughts and that device to chronicle them. So how is this different in the sense of offering that silence and getting in that true secret in the sense of going deeper to who we are and allowing us to capitalize on that solitary status?
Well, when you're in silence with a group, you're actually communicating in very deep ways. You know how sometimes you'll say with a lover or a wife or a husband or a partner, the wonderful thing is when you can just be quiet with them and feel comfortable. So I'm giving people permission to do that, to settle into themselves. And yet we have the comfort of each other around us and other people that are practicing. But also we do writing practice in the retreats. So everybody is writing, which is so wonderful because you're not writing alone. There are other people doing it. And then we read aloud with no comment and no editing. So you begin to study each other's minds and understand how the mind moves. So really, writing is actually a communal act. Even if you're alone and writing, it's important to go deeper so that you feel the connection. What you have to say, your suffering, your story, is reaching out to other people.
You note in the book that you have realized that it's not just writing that people want when they come to these retreats.
Yes, good. No, and that was true of Writing Down the Bones in 1986. People come because, well, first of all, writing is a natural human activity, just like reading. Clouds don't do it, trees don't do it, apples don't do it. Only human beings have language where we write and read. And so it should be available to everyone. And I think people secretly have a need to connect with themselves and to express their lives. And it's a way to see that you are alive and to pass it on. You know, even if it's keeping a journal, even if it's a grandmother writing to their kids, to their grandchildren.
There is a meditative aspect to this.
Definitely. My work is backed by 2,000 years of watching the mind. It is not Natalie's little creative idea. It's rooted in something much deeper. It's in the care and regard for all beings and how do we conduct our lives and how do we wake up in our lives. And it really, doesn't a democracy need that? We need people who trust ourselves and trust what we see, think, and feel so we can speak up and join the democracy.
And you make an interesting point because I think so few of us often know how we indeed feel about something.
Yes, and writing can make you realize how you feel. You might, I know I am, and my students, we're always surprised with what comes out. If you keep your hand moving and say, go, just like a practice, you ring the bell and you sit for 10 minutes. You ring the bell and you write for 10 minutes. You're surprised what comes up because usually we live in discursive thinking. Ay, 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 I have to go shopping, I have to do this, I didn't pay my bills. And writing practice allows you to drop deeper level to where you see what you really see, think, and feel.
Natalie Goldberg is the author of the new book, The True Secret of Writing. It is published by Atria Books. There is a chapter in the book called Loving a Place. So there are those special places that we have in our lives that facilitate this more than, say, a living room or a I mean, the place has to be special.
Well, no, it's special to you.
Right.
And it's special to you sometimes because you live there. I don't know if you read the chapter on KISS.
Yes.
But that chapter is about Albany. And Kennedy, your wonderful author, you know, made Albany. He wrote a trilogy about Albany.
Oh, Albany. Bill Kennedy, yeah.
Yes, and he put, not the other, not John Kennedy, William Kennedy put Albany on the literary map and made me curious about it, wanted to know about it, because he lived there and opened it up for us. It doesn't matter. Special doesn't mean it has to be gorgeous or anything like that. It just has to be your place. And sometimes it takes us going away from our place to realize it's our place.
You write in the book, there's a passage that you read, that you read at the retreats from William Kennedy's work about Albany. And you say that, when I read this passage in Charleston, where two rivers surround and embrace that great southern town, then converge in the sea, I almost fell forward. No sentence structure to hold me up, almost collapsed to the floor, lips first. Just the reading aloud of it is a wonderful experience. Who has ever paid much attention to Albany, New York? And again, it's what's special to you, but it can have great resonance to others as well.
Oh, of course. And that's what it's about. Writing is about, here, I love sardines. This is why I love them. And it gives me an entry. I read it and I think, oh, I'm going to try a sardine. When I flew into Albany, I often fly in there to go to Kripalu in Lenox, Massachusetts.
Right.
But now I rent a car and drive up and down the streets of Albany because of William Kennedy. And I, you know, feel, you know, like, wow, Albany, New York. And William Kennedy gave me that. Writers give that to each other. And you can't just do it by saying, oh, I love it, it's home. I don't know what that means. He gave the details. And that's what you have to do. Give me the details, and I'll love it too.
You actually have an anecdote in the book about flying into Albany and having a car. You're going up to, I assume, Northshire for an event.
Yes.
And the driver is driving you up. You're going through Albany, and you say, do you know William Kennedy? Have you ever read William Kennedy? And the driver says, no, but I know I should, but then tells you how proud the city is of him.
Yes, yes. I was so excited about it. And through that, I had an entree to talk to him. You know, because without that, I would say, oh, live in Albany? Yeah. Oh, that's nice. But suddenly, because of that book, even though he hadn't read it, I had an entree into his life, you know, the driver's life, and some hints, another feeling about what Albany could be like.
So for you, what is that place?
Oh, my goodness. Well, for a long time, I guess it was Minneapolis and Taos, New Mexico. But, you know, I am sort of a whore for place. There's so many places. Like, I have a student who lives in Wichita, Kansas. Now, I've never been there, but just the name, Wichita, I write him letters saying, well, tell me more about Wichita. And my dream is someday to just get in the car and drive to Wichita and just walk up and down the streets. Omaha, Nebraska, kind of odd places, North Dakota, you know, places that other people don't care about. When I'm asked to go teach in L.A. or San Francisco, I'm not that interested. When I'm asked to teach in odd places, Selma, Alabama, I say yes. You know, Greenville, South Carolina, yes, because I want to see those places. My friend says I have a Jones for place. I can even fall in love with someone if they live in that place.
You have a wonderful section in the book, and it's one that I found fascinating because I love the subject of creativity and what ignites us. And you talk about, there's a section of the book called A Third Thing, and you make the point that we're often caught between two things. It's one thing or the other. There's a positive or a negative. There's this or that. And you talk about entering a third thing into the equation, which may often come from the natural spot and almost the subconscious, which is solving the problem for us.
Yes, exactly. We're often fighting between A and B, and we go on and on about it, but what we don't realize is we need C. We need a third thing. That, you know, a way of stepping out and not being so caught. And it really ignited people when I taught that. And that actually comes straight from studying Zen koans. You know, what's the sound of one hand clapping? It's a ridiculous question. You could wrestle with it and go out of your mind. There's no answer. So you have to find a third thing. In a way, you have to step back into some other answer. And you can use it for a lot of things. I was obsessed, I write about it in this book, between should I live in Minneapolis or Taos, two totally opposite places. And they really reflected two senses of my life, you know, a very kind of orderly, rational life, the Midwest, and then the wild mountains of Taos. And finally, I realized that Santa Fe, neither of those two places, but Santa Fe was the answer to both of them.
I made a note about something that you wrote in the book about cynicism. And you talk about how penetrating into situations can also develop cynicism. And you say, you know, it could be a pitfall of developing a writer's mind because you can often become stuck and leaning toward the dark place, that you can be astute, you can be discriminating, but if you look at something long enough, you can tend to go negative. How do you avoid that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Because I want to say a little more about that. For instance, if you look deeply at things, there's a lot of corruption. There's a lot of dishonesty. And if you look deeply, you see that. But what I do, I have to keep practicing, why am I here? Why am I doing this? Having some compassion for the whole thing, for human suffering. So in a way, I have to find a third thing, another place to stand, a reminder to myself that I'm doing this. I'm writing for all beings and not just to get stuck in some partial truth of dishonesty or corruption, but see the whole picture and see the human urge for something alive and to help wake people up. And also part of waking people up is for us not to be naive, to see the corruption, but not to get stuck in it.
And when you speak about getting stuck, you do write about the importance of letting go, of letting go of whatever we get stuck in.
Exactly. Yeah, and get me letting go of even being a writer. I wrote this book, but, you know, it's in the bookstores now. A few weeks, I'll let go of it and go on and write something else.
Is that hard in the sense of, because ultimately, especially for you, because you're writing about writing and you're thinking about it, but this would seem to be a foundation onto something else?
Yes, but I'll find something else to write about, or I'll find new things to write about writing. But it has to be alive, you know, and if we keep holding on, nothing will be fresh or alive. And, you know, the truth is that eventually we let go of everything. We die. So we should practice now. it's not going to, we never get to hold on to everything. So we might as well start letting go now. Not of human life, but of the things that are that we're hold on to too tight, and really it creates suffering.
When your students are at the retreat, I'm curious as to what of how you feel and what it's like for you when you see it click, when you see it ignite someone and they get what you're talking about.
I get high because I'm not alone. It's like, yes, you see it too now. And I feel that I've shared things. And it makes me so happy. You know, I love to teach. I love to study. And I love teachers. And when I have a good teacher, I love that. But I get high when I see it click for a student. It makes me so happy because I'm not separate from them. I get the pleasure all over again.
Natalie Goldberg's new book is The True Secret of Writing, Connecting Life with Language. It is published by Atria Books. Natalie Goldberg, a delight and pleasure to speak with you. I thank you very much for the time.
Oh, I thank you. And it's such an honor to speak to somebody from Albany and someone who read the book, so we could have a true discussion. It's enriched more my feelings about Albany.
Well, I thank you very much for the kind words, and I appreciate your time and effort. We look forward to seeing you here soon.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Again, the name of the book, The True Secret of Writing, Connecting Life with Language, by Natalie Goldberg, published by Atria. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.